Good afternoon and welcome to Radio Estina. I'm your host, Alex Linder. And today's show, we're going to continue with our discussion of the Nameless War by Captain A.H.M. Ramsay, a loyal Briton who was actually jugged, that is to say, to use the conventional term, jailed in World War II Britain for pointing out the Jewish thread, the Jewish revolutionary thread, that was endangering the empire. And as we would see, you know, 60, 70, 80 years later, the island itself. Now, today's show is going to run precisely 40 minutes, and we're gonna stop at 1:40. I have an appointment that was made months before I resumed making these broadcasts that I can't break. So what we'll do is a couple chapters out of The Nameless War, and then we will conclude it next time, next Tuesday at 1 p.m. So, with that said, before getting to The Nameless War, I wanted to mention the going out of business of an anti-white institution called WAMU. And that's this bank, and the reason it's notable is not just that it's one of a number of banks going out of business, as we see the stock market drop and the economy fall apart and the rich Jew billionaires appeal to D.C. to other Jews or Jew-backed politicians to bail out their speculative losses by printing money that you will pay for by inflation. But WAMU is notable for running a long series over the last few years at the least of anti-white ads featuring a cool modern Negro, contrasting him with the herd, literal herd, penned-up herd of old-time white bankers, all of whom appear very white, very waspy, not one of whom appears Jewy or hook-nosed. Now, the meaning of this, and I'm playing with my sound levels here, never seems to get quite right. I almost have to adjust them song by song. But what we're going to, let me see here. Okay. the point about WAMU is that for a couple of years they've been very much sort of the banking equivalent of left-wingism we see in the academy, where whites are to be abolished, and only a racist, a Ku Klux Klansman, or a Nazi would find anything undesirable about abolishing the white race. The banking equivalent of this is having some black commercial host contrasting their modern, advanced, progressive features with the stodgy, old-time banking practices. So it's great to see that this bank, WAMU, has now gone out of business. And I thought the interesting thing was, I saw the news item, and then I did a search to find if I could locate a couple of the ads on YouTube, and I did. The nice thing was that there were two pages of comments left by YouTube users, which were uniformly negative in making the white nationalist point that these guys have been mocking whites forever, and now they go out of business as a result of their diverse practices. The only other thing to say on that head is that a lot of the reason these banks have gone belly up is they've been forced to make bad loans to minorities, as the Jew-controlled media, the Jew-controlled politicians, attack them for what they called redlining. Racist redlining, refusing to write loans in certain areas because such a high percentage of the people in those areas were simply not creditworthy, that it made sense to write the whole thing off. That was outlawed. The Jews go in there and force them to make subprime loans as they try to push the percentage of homeownership ever higher. They pushed it past the natural point at which the people are creditworthy, and they push it onto the lower levels of people who either don't work or aren't responsible. And when you give them loans, naturally they default on that. And then there has developed a secondary business of packaging all of these bogus subprime loans or liar's loans or Alt-A loans and then reselling them to other institutions as a new form of investment. And Jews have always been the forefront of these new financial tools, these derivatives and what have you, and a lot of times it doesn't work out. But the Jewish key is always denied. It's never pointed out that it's Jews inventing these things, Jews using them to swindle others, and then Jews running away to Israel when they get caught, or turning to the Jew-controlled Congress to be bailed out. Now, why do I say Jew-controlled Congress? Because it's literally more than 10% Jews in a nation in which Jews claim that they're only 2%. Also, the fact is that Jews donate the bulk of donations. They are the single largest donor to the Democrats and the Republicans. The Republicans in recent years have even had a queer Jew running their national committee. So the reality is that you have one party with two factions. And the intention is that the adult children known as the Americans, or the Ameriquans as I like to call them, fall for the puppet show every time. They take the appearance for the reality. They don't understand that the champions of the right or the champions of the left are essentially on the same side on all of the deep issues. And the trivial stuff is all that they're allowed to debate for real. And that's why even in these things that they call debates between Barack Obama and John McCain, there's no fundamental disagreement over any essential issue, because they both kowtow to organized Jews. And all you have to do is put their name into a search engine along with APAC, America Israel Political Action Committee, and find their groveling, appeasing, placating, "I will carry your banner" words when they spoke to that group earlier this year. And it's been the same with Sarah Palin, although Jew groups were whining that she had no record of publicly supporting Israel. Now she's gone. She apparently has a flag of Israel in her office. She's gone over to APAC. She's been lectured. She's been told to follow the party line, and she's willing to do this, being a representative of kind of the dirt-eating, low-end Protestant Christianity that itself admires the chicanery and subversion of the Jews and wishes it had the money and the brains to do the same thing. Since it can't do that, at least it can eat toads for the Jews. And that's what Palin is engaged in doing, even if her positions on some things are not precisely what the Jewish potentates would like. That primarily on the subject of abortion. They like abortion because they make a lot of money off of it. And it also rids the world of white men and women who might pose a threat to their cause, of race mixing the rest of the world out of existence. Jews have been doing this for a long time. I was reading last night in Revolutionary Jew about a woman named Odalie Assing, who was a Jew or half-Jew, which means a Jew, from Germany, who came over to the U.S. and became the mistress of Frederick Douglass, the black revolutionary who worked with and fought with the abolitionists. And it was her cause to outrage everybody in America that she could by this obvious and gross, not simply race mixing, but adulterous race mixing. And this is the kind of things Jews do. They take pride in their disruption of settled patterns. They take pride in the destruction of things for the destruction's sake itself. They enjoy despoiling things, defaming things, slandering things, smearing things. They love that. It's what they do. And that's one of the unmarked things about Jews, is that there doesn't have to be any deeper reason than they enjoy destroying things that aren't theirs for their own sake, even while they whine about what great victims they are and how they've been enslaved through history and only now are they getting some of theirs back. That's not it at all. They enjoy destroying things for its own sake. It's what they are. It's what they do. It's what they've done long enough that it's become what they are. Now, let's turn to the Nameless War, and let's give that a good half-hour reading. And as I said, I've got to be out of here at 1:40 for a 1:45 appointment. So one of the beauties of living in a small town, and I don't know if a lot of you probably, like me, grew up in the suburbs, and maybe you moved to a big city and worked there after college, but I can tell you that high up in the list of the great things about living in a small town is you can get everywhere within 2-3 minutes, and you can get almost anything done, whether it's city hall, the DMV, doctor or dentist appointment. You can get all of that accomplished very quickly without having to spend hours in traffic and hours in waiting rooms. And you know how it is, I mean, down in St. Louis or something, you go to a DMV and you get some obese, uncaring, lazy, nasty, stupid black woman who looks at you like you're a threat to her rather than the customer, the government, the pseudo-private institutions that are actually government socialist entities like to pretend they are, with all of their mock commercial caring about customers. Well, the reality is they don't care. But in a small town, it's nearly 100% white. The workers in every office are, you know, usually at least 90% white. There's a little affirmative action, but it hasn't totally spread it to every nook and cranny. And so you get actual service fairly quickly. Now, that said, that's why I'm able to leave. I'm able to do this until 1:40, hop in my car and get to my appointment by 1:45. So that's what we're going to do. Now, let's go back to the Nameless War. You'll remember on the last radio with Stina, and I've lost a little track of the numbering. I think we're on 27 or 28 today. Every Tuesday, the MP3 URL is always up within 24 hours, thanks to our archivist. And you're welcome to spread these around. And I know that we have thousands of downloads per show because we investigated that. And what we try to do is bring you literature and bring you news items and give you the white point of view on those, because you're not going to get it from the mainstream media, which is always trying to encourage you. And I'll take another little aside here just briefly. One thing MTV has been doing, I happened to see the other day, is they've had their Rock the Vote campaign for years, for at least a decade. And this is some mix of giant communication companies combined with leftist groups like Move On, combined with Public Ad Council. And what they do is they encourage youth to vote. But the particular ad that I saw, and I didn't note the URL or I didn't note who produced it, but its format was X percent of black youth don't vote, X percent of, you know, Asian youth don't vote, and X percent of Mexican youth don't vote. Not a thing was said about white youth. They're having interest, or they're voting. And this is very much how Americois operates after the communist leftist revolution in the 60s, when their plan for white America took full effect as they achieved dominance in the Congress and through the media and upended the South's settled pattern of living with dangerous jungle animals called blacks. What they've done is deny that whites exist as a group, deny that they have any interest, deny that they have any right to protect those interests, claim that only whites can't be discriminated against. So, even though whites are routinely mocked, and all kinds of subsets of whites are routinely mocked, such as blondes, rednecks, etc., etc., white trash, Eurotrash, even though these are staples of the controlled media, the theory and the leftist idealizing or ideologuing behind it that you find in the universities is that whites alone are racist. Only whites can be racist. Jews and minorities can never be racist because whites have all the power. And then you turn around and say, well, if whites have all the power, and whites are the only ones who can be racist, and whites can't be discriminated against, why are they literally and legally discriminated against, and why are they mocked around the clock in commercials like those put out by WAMU, and in content put out by giant Jew-owned communication companies like MTV, Viacom? So what they're doing is flipping reality and simply lying about it in order to discourage and destroy whatever white society is still out there. in our radio show, Radio Istina, Istina being the opposite of Pravda, the ideological truth, which is in reality a lie. Istina is the Russian antonym meaning the street-level reality, the factual truth, the objective, observable truth, the facts of the situation. And that's why we named it that, and it's our purpose to bring you the facts about what's going on in the world, so you learn to take the news of the day from a white perspective and see how your race is getting screwed by the actual rulers of society, and understand that we need to identify as whites in order to resist. It is our argument that that is the only basis from which we can resist the cultural attacks and depredations of the controlling Jews. The Jews who have destroyed our money, who have made us a bankrupt country, who take money out of your paycheck and force you to subsidize black colonies, and create lies in order to start foreign wars that kill millions of innocent foreigners in order to make the world safer for the gangster state of Israel, which they, of course, in an anti-reality way, in a Pravda way, portray as our gallant little democratic ally and our heroic little beachhead in the Middle East. But before Israel existed, we didn't have enemies over there. The Arabs loved us. They thought we were great guys. We went in there and we developed their oil fields, which they weren't able to do themselves, making some of those states extremely rich. Israel came along and changed all that. Now, after a couple of threats, we really are going to get to the Nameless War. Last time, what we saw was we talked about Dunkirk, we talked about Churchill in relation to military man and member of Parliament Ramsay's observations that Germany and Britain under Chamberlain and Hitler had an agreement not to bomb each other's civilian populations. That wasn't working so well for the Jews, whose interest lay in creating a full, complete, full-figured, voluptuous world war, and they needed to have Britain bombing German civilian populations in order to get Germany to respond. Their man, because they paid his debts and raised him back up to power after a bleak period, was Winston Churchill. And the very day, the night of the day he took office, I believe it was May 11th, 1940, he began a campaign to bomb German civilian centers. Before that time, the war, which had started 8 months earlier in September of 1939, was called a phony war because there wasn't much being fought on the Western Front. It was Germany retaking German parts of what had been given to Poland after World War I by, as Ramsay points out, the Jew advisors who were the took care of the nuts and bolts for the Big Four. Even though they may have had a goyish face, the reality was it was a bunch of Jews looking after Jewish interests who reapportioned Germany after the war and who set the stage for the next big war because, you know, you don't always get everything you want the first time. You have to keep working and working and working away at it, and Jews are nothing if not persistent in that regard. And just as they needed to keep Europe warring with itself in order to destroy it and bring about all the anti-racist superstate garbage they have today, where they won't even allow whites to criticize the state of affairs the Jew-owned multicultural elites have created by letting in the third world, they will throw whites in jail for talking about it, let alone actually protecting their countries. And so, what we're going to talk about today is Jew operations in the other sphere over in America. And this is Chapter 9 of the Nameless War, The Shape of Things to Come. Again, Captain A.H.M. Ramsay, he was jailed in Britain from 1940 to 1944. That's part of the story. We're not going to probably have time to get to that today, but we will next time when we will finish with this book next Tuesday. But the last couple of Radio Istinas, we've gone through chapters 3 through 8, and today we'll start with 9. And Ramsay says, "In the newfound knowledge of Hitler's anxiety to preserve the British Empire has come as a surprise recently to many people in this country," meaning Britain. "It must surely come as a real shock to them to learn that President Roosevelt, on the other hand, was its inveterate enemy." There, and the point that Ramsay made here and he made in our last discussion was that Churchill expressed in Mein Kampf his admiration not only for the Catholic Church, but for the British Empire, as an element of stability in Europe, and something that he sought to preserve, not to destroy. So when the Jews today in the media tell you that Germany wanted to take over the world and it wanted to destroy everybody and every nation and make us all speak German, that isn't true. Hitler was on the side of the British Empire and he supported the Catholic Church. The guy who was actually against the British Empire was the Jew-descended Franklin Roosevelt, the virtual dictator of the U.S. back then, with his circle of Jew advisors, itching to get us into the war, concocting a Pearl Harbor so that we could get into the war, and then immediately directing our financial and commercial and armament support to Britain and to the Soviet Union in order to destroy the Nazis and leave Britain bankrupt and without empire. And the Judeo-Bolshevist Soviet Union as practically the sole power in Europe. That he was not only a pro-communist of Jewish origin, but that before he brought America into the war, he made it clear that he wished to break up the British Empire, says Ramsey of FDR. His son, Colonel Elliot Roosevelt, makes this last point very clear in his book, As He Saw It, recently published in the USA. On pages 19 to 28 of this book, Colonel Roosevelt tells us that in August 1941, his father, having given out to the American people that he was going off on a fishing trip, actually proceeded to a meeting with Mr. Churchill on board a warship in Argentia Bay. Lord Beaverbrook, Sir Edward Cadogan, and Lord Cherwell, Professor Lindemann of doubtful race and nationality, and Mr. Averell Harriman were present, he says. On page 35, he quotes his father as saying, that's FDR, quote, "After the war, there will have to be the greatest possible freedom of trade, no artificial barriers," unquote. Mr. Churchill referred to the British Empire trade agreements, and Mr. Roosevelt replied, "Yes, those trade agreements are a case in point. It's because of them that the peoples of India, Africa, and all of the colonial Near East are still as backward as they are. I can't believe that we can fight a war against fascist slavery and at the same time not work to free people all over the world from a backward colonial policy." "The peace," said Father firmly, said FDR firmly, "cannot include any continued despotism. So here lie the seeds of the multiculturalism that was to be the form of anti-Nazism or anti-racism took after World War II. Remember that racism was coined as a word by a Jewish communist named Trotsky, and it was first publicized and popularized by a Jew sex scientist who promoted homosexuality in Germany in the title of his book. His name was Magnus Hirschfeld. So all of these terms which never existed before, this term racism, which is probably the preeminent political smear of our time, the preeminent word, it's just a code word meaning white, because as we discussed earlier, non-whites are never called racist. The only time they're called racist is by whites who are trying to fight back and apply, using their white fairness, the fairness that's common only to white people, trying to apply that to people who treat them the way they are supposedly or accused of treating others. And so, Jews have invented all the terms of our discourse. They own our Congress, and they own the media through which all of this is portrayed and presented and filtered. So that's why we're in bad straits. That's the ultimate explanation of it. We have allowed the Jews into our country. We treat them as individuals when in fact they're a hostile team attempting to destroy not only our living ways, but our very lives. The very existence of our kind is threatened by Jews anywhere because of their penchant for destroying host societies. And so, Jew-descended FDR wants to get into the war to destroy Nazi Germany, which threatens his kind because it's a retaking of power by white people for white people. But he wants a two-for-one. He doesn't want, just along with his Jewish confreres, to destroy Nazi Germany. He wants to get rid of the entire British Empire, which he's accusing of creating the backwardness of the third world people, when in fact the British Empire was what created the infrastructure that those people relied on. And we saw that after they did gain independence in the decades after the Second World War, those nations fell apart. Watch the film Africa Audio, made by a couple of Italians, even though they're leftists. They presented a pretty good picture of how ridiculous it is to think that Africans can make it on their own. They contrast the formerly civilized beauty of South Africa, created by Boer folk, by European peasants from Holland, France, and Germany, with the absolute savagery of the African natives. And this is what FDR wanted to do, like the other Jews. He wanted to destroy white pockets of power everywhere around the world and at home too. And the way they're going to do this is through their newly coined word, anti-racism. As soon as they smash the Nazi racist, the Nazi racist, the Nazi anti-Semites, then they can get on with indoctrinating people in their own countries to hate themselves, hate their own kind, and to think that we can mix all the world without creating any problems. This insolent talk against the British Empire became so pronounced that on page 31, Colonel Roosevelt reports, Mr. Churchill is saying, Mr. President, I believe you are trying to do away with the British Empire. Unquote. This comment was very near the mark, as the President had been talking about India, Burma, Egypt, Palestine, Indochina, Indonesia, and all the African colonies having to be, quote-unquote, freed. Remember what the founder of modern conservatism says about liberating people or allowing new classes to vote. If you're going to liberate people, it pays you to consider what they might do liberated. What are blacks going to do if you liberate them? Well, they're going to rape, murder, steal, use drugs, and wine. Is that what we want? Is not freeing blacks enslaving ourselves? On page 115, the colonel reports his father is saying, Don't think for a moment, Elliot, that is FDR's son, that Americans would be dying in the Pacific tonight if it hadn't been for the short-sighted greed of the French, the British, and the Dutch. Shall we allow them to do it all over again? These were not at all the reasons, however, given for the war, and for which Americans thought they were dying. So you see the parallel to the weapons of mass destruction. The real cause was to make the Middle East safer for Israel, so that it could expand and dominate to a greater extent its neighbors. But the actual pretext given was that, oh, Saddam has weapons of mass destruction, when that was proved to be a lie, and then they switched to, well, we need to democratize Iran and Iraq. Always a lie, always a pretext. Wherever you're dealing with Jews, you're dealing with a pretended universal benevolence, a pretended universal cause, which is actually a Jew-specific agenda item they're pursuing under a false name. So he says, these were not at all the reasons, however, given for the war, that is, destroying the British Empire, and for which Americans thought they were dying, nor indeed does the President make any reference as to the pretext given his countrymen for the war. The British, dying in greater numbers, have on the contrary been told that they are dying to defend their empire from Hitler's wicked plans. Little do they suspect that it is their so-called ally who plans its destruction. So, always white men have shown that they are able to be tricked, fooled, and misled, deceived by the cunning, evil Jews. The cunning, evil, wicked Jews use the white men against their own interests. They cloud their minds. They fill them full of ridiculous ideology so that they can't see the plain facts in front of them. But what they ultimately have in mind is always their own agenda. Their agenda in Britain is using Churchill to destroy the British Empire, whether Churchill, a very intelligent man, realizes that himself or not. There's a lesson to us there. Be very, very careful that what you think you are doing is what you are actually doing, because very often it's not. And perhaps you're being misled by someone else or some other cause to serve it, much as a cowbird lays its bird in another bird species' nest and has the other bird species raise it at their own cost. That's how they make their way in the world. And if there are that kind of animal out there, why couldn't there be the same thing among humans? This one group of humans uses another species of human, and that's what it used to be called, People say, oh, we're the same species. Well, it used to be verbally, and I thank a VNNforum.com member for pointing this out. It used to be originally the different races of human were known as different species of human. So everything that can be done to make them appear closer and more similar and more mixable will be done by the Jews, and they will use the terminology that advances their cause, from species to race to we're all just citizens of the world, we're all equals. So the Americans are lied to about the reasons for World War II, and the British are lied to. They're told that they're fighting to save their empire, but in fact Hitler had no designs on their empire. He wanted to work with it, give Britain control of the seas and the overseas colonies in exchange for giving Germany a free hand on the continent to wipe out Judeo-Bolshevism, as the Germans called it, or communism in the Soviet Union, as created by Jewish gangsters using Jewish-American money. When we've won the war, the president is reported as saying on page 116, I will see that the USA is not wheedled into any plans that will aid or abet the British Empire in its imperialist ambitions, unquote. And a few pages later, quote, I have tried to make it clear to Winston and the others that they must never get the idea that we are in it just to help them hang on to the archaic and medieval empire ideas. So you can see from that quotation very clearly that FDR is a forerunner of modern liberals. And their only real concern is killing off, getting rid of, disempowering rational, reasonable, capable white men and empowering MUDs. And they don't give a damn about the results. In fact, they enjoy the results. White men are so constituted, they enjoy seeing other white men raped and murdered. The Jews know this and they use it against us. We saw it in America in the abolitionist movement. The abolitionists didn't give a damn about the blacks. They gave a damn about destroying the white Southerners, destroying their society. Those who sup with the devil need a long spoon. Mr. Churchill, the self-styled constant architect of the Jews' future, now found himself playing, and that's interesting. I've never seen that phrase before, but I guess it comes from Churchill. Mr. Churchill, the self-styled, quote, constant architect of the Jews' future, unquote, now found himself playing second fiddle to an even more trusted architect, so eminent, in fact, that he did not make any silly pretensions of respect for the British Empire. So Churchill's number two, FDR is number one. They're both pushing what's good for the Jews. But FDR realizes it, whereas Churchill apparently doesn't. The earlier Moses, Karl Marx, had denounced the empire long ago, and in the year 1941, it was only foolish opponents of Judaism and Marxism, like Herr Hitler, who were anxious to stand by that empire because they recognized it as a bulwark of Christian civilization. So, Hitler is presented as an insane madman, an evil racist, and since the people who present him that way, we have shown by a thousand examples, are hostile to everything that helps and preserves you and yours, then Hitler is not the bad guy. In fact, he must be the good guy. And you know he's the good guy if for no other reason that the real bad guys say he's a bad guy. The Jews aren't looking out for your interests. Hitler wasn't encouraging your daughter to mate with niggers, to become a slut. He wasn't encouraging your son to go off and die for Israel. He was trying to defend the German section of the white race from what the Jews had done, what they'd accomplished through their murderous bloodletting and revolutionary activity in Russia. He didn't want that to sweep over Western Europe, and he was willing to work with the Catholic Church and the British Empire to prevent it and to stamp it out even where it had successfully taken hold. But having our media controlled by the enemy of Hitler is very much the enemy of Americans. And now we see as our country, you know, war after war, money is worthless. We've got presidential contenders who can't wait to wipe out freedom of speech, give America the same hate crimes laws as they already have in Europe, and prevent white men from speaking the words that I'm speaking to you today, the Jews don't want me telling you the truth about what they're doing and what their presence means for you and your kind. That's why we do this show. Just a couple minutes left now. So the main point here from Ramsay is that Hitler was a friend of the British Empire. Churchill, whether witting or unwitting, was its enemy, and FDR was its overt and declared enemy. Yet all of this was kept from the people, so that the people in Britain and her soldiers were under one impression, Americans were under another impression, but the people actually directing this charade knew exactly what they were after, and they got it. And that's why our countries are falling apart now. They've gone from the hot war of shooting bullets to those who actually had power and were able to physically resist the Judeo-Bolshevists, to the hate crimes laws, the speech crimes laws, the denial of free speech, the taking of weapons from people, and the long, cold war of indoctrination. And submission generation, or making people happy with being slaves and filling their heads with lies. And for the minority who figure out what's going on, well, there's always enough room in prison for Guillermo Rudolph, or for the heretical too, Stephen Whittle and Simon Shepherd. There's always a prison cell for the Ernst Zundels, for the white nationalists, for the revisionists. There's always enough room to throw them in prison, just as Ramsay himself, as we'll see in a future broadcast, was thrown in prison for trying to bring the real news of the day to the British people. Although, as we have seen, Mr. Churchill is shown in this book as getting a little petulant from time to time over the president's pronouncements regarding the liquidation of the empire, that is, that's how he's portrayed in FDR's son's book, I'm trying to find the title of that book again, As He Saw It. Although Churchill is portrayed as petulant in Colonel Elliot Roosevelt's, FDR's son's book, As He Saw It, this did not prevent him from announcing himself later to the House of Commons as, quote, Roosevelt's ardent lieutenant. So Roosevelt's the top dog, and Churchill is his lieutenant. Both of them serve the Jews, although they recognize that to different degrees. Under what special circumstances the king's prime minister could be an ardent lieutenant of a Republican president, whose design it was to destroy that monarch's empire, Mr. Churchill did not explain. Nor has he yet done so. And remember, this book, I think, is published in 1952. On another occasion, Mr. Churchill made an equally cryptic remark. It is no part of my duties, he assured the House of Commons, to preside over the liquidation of the British Empire. And yet that's precisely what happened in the 20 years or so after the war. No, indeed, says Ramsay, nor was it any part of his duties, on being told that it was to be liquidated, to pronounce himself to be the ardent lieutenant of the would-be liquidator. Nor, we might add, when Minister of Defense, with Admiralty and other codes at his disposal, was it any part of his duties, as Mr. Chamberlain's lieutenant, albeit not very ardent, to conduct a personal correspondence of the nature of which he did conduct with President Roosevelt by means of the top-secret code of the American Foreign Office. And that's where Chapter 9 ends, and we'll have to end for today. The point there being, while Neville Chamberlain, who truly looked after the interests of Britain by reaching an understanding with Hitler, and he understood that Hitler did not want to destroy the British Empire, he wanted to befriend Britain, as proved by his actions in not bombing Britain's civilian populations and allowing Britain's army to escape at Dunkirk. While he's doing all that, Churchill is conspiring behind his back to take power, and Churchill, when he does take power, starts bombing German civilians in order to turn the phony war in the West into a real war, and thereby initiates the process that ultimately leads to the destruction of the British Empire, and today the destruction of the island, as it's filled with coloreds. Britain not being, you know, 1/50th the size of the U.S., there ain't anywhere for the white people to run. So beware of things with surfaces. Look beneath the surface. Don't accept things at face value. And I'll be with you next Tuesday. Thanks for listening. Night.